Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, Pels fans, we've got a new sponsor you guys are going to love. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, and every time your teams win, you earn cash. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the 7,000 early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.symbol.com to create a free account, and when you deposit, make sure to use the promo code XYZ to make your deposit risk-free. Visit https://symbol.com and use the promo code SD and your deposit will be risk-free. That means even if you lose money, Symbol will refund your initial deposit. No questions asked. Join Symbol and start investing and profiting from your favorite teams. All right, let's talk about the Spotify Green Room app. It's live, audio-only sports talk platform. You can talk to me, Chris Connor, other fans, athletes. You can talk to insiders in real time as news breaks. Get in on the conversation that you listen to here every day. After opening night, go to Spotify Green Room, start a conversation with other fans, and share your own experiences, share your own takes on the app. This is your chance to be featured. All right, download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS App Store. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and join your favorite group. You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Sports Drink Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of The Bird Calls. Joining me as usual, Kevin Berrios and our editor-in-chief, Ali Cosell. But also joining us tonight, the host of Late Night with on Twitter, his Spaces, our man, Chris Connor. Chris, welcome, man. How are you doing?
I feel pretty good. There hasn't been any big news that's dropped recently, has it?
I don't know.
Like, no, like damaging articles or anything.
Zach Lowe. I just listened to Zach Lowe's podcast, Chris. He said the season's basically over for the Pelicans. 12 games in.
Well, some people said it was over, like no games in.
One person said it was over last year.
And one said it was over when they hired that lizard man to start running the franchise.
Oh, man.
All right, we're getting off to a good start.
I wonder what Eyes Wide Shut party he's at tonight.
Man, this has been, for a team that only lost one game this week so far, two games this week so far, they've taken about 4 or 5 L's off the court as well. And we are back in a place, quite honestly, fellas, where the Pelicans are once again a laughingstock. And that is a hard position to be in, you know, 2+ years after the Anthony Davis era ended. Kevin, as the suffering fan that you are, how does it feel to be 1-11 at this point and seeing what you're seeing both on the court and around this team?
It's crazy because, like, David Griffin has me, like, agreeing with my mortal enemies, Brian Windhorst and JJ Redick. And, you know, like that's the bad thing. And then also, you know, like whenever Bill Simmons gets a chance to trash the New Orleans basketball team, he's all over it. And right now you can't really counter what he says, even when he has some factual inaccurate information. It's frustrating. I really want to thank Chris for his Spaces because those things are just so enjoyable. Like, I'll watch the game and I'll just be like, ugh, this is, just feel like so drained and disconnected and just uninterested anymore, then I'll hop in that spaces. And then within 2 minutes of being in that space, there's somebody in there that's amazing, that breaks out an incredible joke, and it just fixes everything. And then everybody starts riffing off of that. And there's so many hilarious people in the city. And if you're having trouble dealing with watching the games right now, I highly recommend you get in those spaces. I see a lot of people trying to gatekeep those things, and it's just weird to me. It's like, I just feel like whatever brings people joy related to this basketball team, I don't care if it's because you like the uniforms. I don't care if it's because you like the weird neon red jalapenos on the nachos in the arena. Whatever it is that brings you joy, great. Embrace that and enjoy that. And if other people enjoy something you don't about it, you don't have to criticize them for it. You know, people be fans and take what they want out of the games and out of the experience. And I'm glad that there's something that's providing joy for people, because I know I'm not the only one in there that's dying laughing constantly, listening to people with the most incredible jokes every week. Or I should say every game, because it's multiple times a week. So if you're not listening to those, you should definitely start, especially if you're down in the dumps dealing with what's going on with this team.
Chris,
did Kevin just become my agent?
I've always been your self-help group.
You know, there's no coffee served and there's no name tags, but you are the mediator, the moderator, the originator. When you're managing that space on a night to night basis, when you started it, what were you thinking about? And now, as it's evolved, do you feel like you've created a monster?
So, I mean, the original thought. I mean, I've seen other people. I wasn't the first person. I won't be the last to kind of run these things.
Right.
I jumping in a lot of the spaces that. My guy Vinay and, Maple, as you guys know, they were doing a lot over the postseason. There was some inspiration there. There's even some Laker guys. I can't think of the names right now, but they do one after every game. And even Shaman and Andrew did a couple last year. But, for me, it was more so just the thought of, like, I felt like just we needed something else. I thought that the city, the team needed something else. I mean, when you watch people tweet about the Pelicans, even people that are in the city, it's just a lot of times it's very pessimistic. And I understand, it's hard not to be in a lot of cases or situations. I mean, my thought process was from the first one I did was that, like, people need therapy. And I don't know if I knew how serious, it was when I thought that or when I said that. But it's clearly what it is for a lot of people. And I think more than anything, it's helping the engagement. I mean, there's no reason in hell for a 1-11 team to have a spaces or a platform available live to where 300 people are in it. It's a monster to me right now. I can't tell you why it's as positive or why it's as connected as it is. But my goal was just to give people something to laugh about, crack jokes, have a good time. It may not be everybody's cup of tea. It may not, we talk in ways that may not be, some people are uncomfortable with. I can't really do much about that, because that's the type of energy and environment that I like and that I wanted. It may seem negative to some people in some cases, but I mean, we have a good time, man. And when your team's 1-11, when your team's continuing to lose games and there's always something happening, drama, injuries, you need something else to look forward to. And if I can provide that for people for an hour or 2 hours out of their day and give them a platform to speak, whether it's sometimes nonsense or something I don't agree with, I want to provide that. You don't have that everywhere when these games end at 9 o'clock. Ain't many places you could call and just be yourself after you just watch the Pelicans blow up, give up a 14-0 run at the end of the third quarter again. So I'm just happy people are rocking with it. And, I hope that I can continue it and, it continues to gain more attention, esteem, and love.
Chris, I got a quick question for you. Did it take off after Antonio Daniels made an appearance, or was it like as soon as you started the spaces, there was basically 100 people there chatting with you?
I think Antonio, yeah, I mean, he had a lot to do with it. I think that the first one we did, you know, it was somewhere around 80. I had one that was maybe at 100. But the Antonio Daniels, you know, appearance kind of broke things open, because I think that day we had like 800 people in there, and it was crazy. Yeah. It was like 3 o'clock.
I jumped in for a few minutes. That's why I'm asking. Yeah, and I saw that.
It was like 800. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was nuts. So I mean, it brought a lot of different people that maybe, you know, didn't know. And to be honest, I mean, it wasn't just Pelicans fans in there. It was people in there laughing at our pain from, you know, opposing fan base. And they're just people that just see like, yo, what's going on? Like, it's 3 o'clock on a Tuesday. The regular season hasn't started yet. Like what's happening here? But yeah, I mean, I do think I owe some of that to Antonio. But I would say, man, maybe the consistency with it, maybe doing it after every game or almost every game, it's what is continuing to bring the numbers, and then people are going out and tweeting about it afterwards, man. But it's the fans at the end of the day, man. I go up there and host and try to keep people from, you know, from killing each other. And I mean, it's like I say, the fans and the people that come up there, Grub, Kev, and I mean, everybody that's coming up there and saying something, they're offering something different, a different perspective. And to me, that's what makes it fun. We ain't always got to talk about the same shit or agree with what the next person is saying, but let's hear another perspective and then go ahead and talk about it. And it really, you know, it hasn't been, you know, anything too negative that I can really speak of as of yet. So, but AD definitely played a big role with his appearance.
Let me ask you another quick question. I was just going to ask Chris something real quick. You mentioned something when we were talking about when you started Spaces. You said something about a postseason. What is that? I don't understand what that means.
I'm sorry, man. Ollie, we have to do this from a different way, because you and I have to get into the specifics every game. We have to get into the details, and we don't get to have our first reaction be visceral like everyone else. But it is, you know, it's visceral during the game. It's hard to write the stories over and over again when you're here in this place, and you know, we've been here before. When you're in this place where losing is just the constant, it becomes difficult to do your job. How much of a struggle has it been to you know, to be impartial and not be too negative, but also at the same time be completely honest about what it is that you're seeing?
It's probably been the most trying season so far, and I'm hoping it changes, but yeah, it has changed the way I just live day to day. I used to like going on Twitter a lot more. I used to actually interact a lot more. But each losing season, each kind of disappointment has kind of dragged me down a little bit further. COVID really changed things. But now this season, boy, we all had expectations of nothing mind-blowing, right? I know most of us, including I know Grubb, we didn't even see, you know, probably a 500 season. But you felt play-in tournament. You felt there was enough reason for excitement. And it wasn't just one or two players. And for us to suddenly find us here and just to be going down this ladder. I mean, I've started so many articles where I wanted to write something big and positive about Brandon Ingram. Got 700 words in. Then, of course, he has his injury. I just started writing something on Josh Hart. Then he got thrown out of yesterday's game. So, as you guys know, I like to look from a more positive angle because amid all this misery. Otherwise, I would just quit. I would literally probably stop watching even games. Let alone, I would definitely stop writing. But it's been tough. It's been tough to talk to you once a week and others on radio shows, because it's almost the same damn topic. At least it's been for the last almost month now, right? And I don't even know where to go from there, because you look up and down. Where do you find your source of optimism? Is it in the front office? No. It's been here now for almost 2.5 years or whatever, and there's been no positive signs of establishing a culture of sustainable success. You look at the coaches. Oh, I'm in love with Willie Green, but if you count the last couple of years, well, you've got your fingers crossed, right? Well, he looks like the real deal. You hope he is, and it's all positive up front. But I could have said the same thing about, you know, Stan Van Gundy when he started his tenure. I know not everybody was on board, and you just go down the list with the players. right? We all have these dreams of Zion being the guy that's going to potentially lead New Orleans to a championship. Now we're talking about, does this guy even care enough to get himself into shape, right? Do we think, how much do we believe his family's going to be running interference all the time? And then, just like I said, go down the list of players. Almost every game now, I feel like there's six or seven guys that Willie Green is forced to play, but he's not getting anything positive out of them. So, right, where are the positives? And I just look, and it's just disappointing. And really, it culminated in last night's loss. The Pelicans, I was feeling good. They were up 38-31, or was it 39? Yeah, 39-31, I believe. Kyra Lewis had a breakaway dunk. And I'm thinking to myself, I start typing out a tweet. Pelicans might be going on a run. They're going to actually put away a game maybe, you know, in the first half. In the blink of an eye, you know, the Thunder made a turnaround. Then the technicals got called. Pelicans started losing their cool. And I was getting upset at the time. Specifically, I got mad at Jackson Hayes because I watched his reaction. I've seen that before out of him. Sure, he may have taken some contact, but he complains to the refs. He turns too much now and talks when, honestly, this guy can't even earn regular rotation minutes. Nobody knows who he is in the league, and he darn sure as heck does not have any kind of reputation. So why is he talking in the game that they must have where they know the margin for error is small? So to hear Willie Green then talk about it in the post game, you know, I understood everything he was talking about, but that also made me solemn because, like I said, where are the positives? And Willie Green's having to deal with this mind-boggling turn of events, this excitement that he came on board for his first head coaching job to now find himself where he is today. I can't even imagine what it is for some of these guys that have to put in 14, 15, 16 hours a day trying to get these guys just to learn the game, get on the same page, because that's what it's taking right now, right? You can rely on Jonas Valanciunas, Devontae Graham, Josh Hart for the most part, B.I. when he's out there, but really the rest of the guys, I mean, even, you know, what, Herbert Jones has his highlights and glimpses, but he's far from a polished product. And I'm not just talking about him being, you know, an offensive kind of threat out there. He still makes mistakes defensively on reads and stuff. So, like I said, it's been just a disappointment that none of us, and I mean even the most pessimistic ones among us, could have foreseen coming. So it does. It hurts because how do you find any enjoyment from this? How do you want to keep watching, let alone writing or talking about it? I don't know, and that's where I find myself right now.
Yeah, my inner Larry Brown, you know, because I just love basketball. I love it. I can watch it any level, anytime. And the Pelicans will take away your love of basketball. And I say that because it's just it's never injuries. It's never this. It's watching them play is just so incredibly frustrating. And if people who are Saints fans try to recall, there was this time. I mean, I guess the closest for a lot of people would be the Ditka era, and just how nothing was right. You know, there were occasionally there was a guy on the team. You know, Willie Rofe was there. There were other guys who were really good on that team. Leroy Glover, people who had talent. The team was terrible, just awful to watch, and you hated watching them. They weren't fun. And that's the way I feel this season about the Pelicans. It's like we're being sold. We were sold in the beginning. Hey, there's no problem. You know, David Griffin said up there, hey, it's all cool. You guys are tripping. You know, I don't know what the big deal is. Everything's going to be great. And then here you are, 1-11, and you just lost to children. Your team is young, but these are kids, 19, 20, you know, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is their leader, and he's only 1 year older than his cousin. You know what I mean? And so it's bizarre to me to watch.
But that's also what hurts, David. Just to your point, we were excited about a lot of this roster. I didn't meet one person that was pessimistic about, say, roughly half of this team. And now it's hard to be optimistic about more than half this team, right?
I don't even know if you're at half. If you're counting 15 players, are you optimistic about the development at this point of every year or higher? The people who have been here since the Pelicans, since Griffin took over. Because I'm not going to put it on Herb. I'm not going to put it on, you know, Trey. They're rookies, and they've been put into a crappy situation. But Najee in his second year now, regression. And we were counting on Najee, counting on him. after what he did, he looked at the end of last season, regression. So Jackson, regression. Nikhil, regression. You don't want to play Kyra right now. He's as bad a guard as there is in the league when he's on the floor as far as contributing to losing. So where's the progression for any of these people that Griffin has brought in? And then your veterans that you have in Satoransky and in Temple are hot garbage. They don't help you at all. You got one thing right, and that's Valanciunas this offseason. That's the one thing. And Devontae has been solid. You know, and that's all you asked him to be, was solid, but that's what he's been. Mm-hmm. But you got the one thing you got right was Valanciunas, and that was because you had to unload the mistakes you made last season. So, I mean, you guys tell me, where have you seen development from this team from year one to year three with some of these guys? Are they better ball players?
Kevin or Chris?
Anyone?
Kevin, go ahead.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. Jackson, I think you and I always kind of felt the same about Jackson Hayes. And towards the end of last year, he kind of changed my opinion of him. The way he was approaching the game and was developing looked like he was turning the corner. And this season, he is just as bad as he was his first season. So it's a huge regression for him. Nikhil, you know, he's always going to fight through screens. He's always going to contribute little things here and there that are a positive. But offensively, until last night, he's really been a nightmare. And, you know, I'm one of his biggest fans. So, like, I still have faith in him because I see the tools that he has. He can finish with both hands. He's got a decent handle. You know, he's good at getting to the rim. But he hasn't been playing the way you want him to play. And then the shot has just been completely gone. And then, you know, Kyra has been terrible. And like Najee Marshall has been terrible. And like you said, you know, like you, one of people's main arguments about this team is, oh, Zion and BI. So of course everybody's going to look bad. And there's truth in that for sure. But also, towards the end of last year, we didn't have Zion playing, and that's when Najee was shining, right? He was playing
really well. B.I. sat down, too.
What's that?
B.I. sat down, too.
Right, right. So, like, he looked good in that role without those guys, and now he's a total shell of himself, no confidence, not really playmaking like he used to do. Not really fighting hard defensively either. So, I mean, like you said, you could go down the roster. Anybody that was here last year is worse than they were. Anybody that was brought in outside of Valanciunas is worse than they were last year, because even Devontae Graham is looking worse than he was last year in Charlotte. Now, obviously, you know, it's a role change. It's getting used to new people. Was getting used to a new system, so there's going to be that. And I believe strongly in Devontae because, you know, I watched a lot of the Hornets the last 2 years, and he always popped off the page for me as a solid effort guy and a guy that could get buckets and contribute to winning. So I still believe in him, and I know he's better playing off of a star. And Valanciunas has kind of been, you know, a star. I mean, if we had a decent record, he would probably be an all-star center right now if they're voting, but obviously our record would keep him from getting that vote. So, you know, it is troubling. Hopefully Naw's breakout game last night was actually a breakout game, and we start to see him play that way going forward and the shots start falling, but mainly after he starts attacking the basket and that becomes the impetus of his game. And, you know, I don't know what you do with Jackson Hayes. I think he's basically unplayable. I would definitely be trying to move him if I was in charge, but I don't know what you could get for him at this moment. But hey, if Memphis wanted some more size in the middle and they were willing to part ways with Brandon Clark, I would be more than happy to send him over there with some sweetener to get that done.
So, We did forget Herb Jones, of course. I mean, I think that he missed a few games, so his first game.
Didn't forget
Herb. Yeah. Well, no, but I'm saying when we mentioned the bright spots, you know, on the year, it was, you know, I mean, we mentioned Jonas, but it wasn't a lot. I didn't hear from
Ollie went through Herb. He was talking about how Herb had played well, but you know.
Okay, fair enough. It's outside of that, man, it's hard to really disagree with, you know, with much that, you know, you guys have brought forward.
Hey, Chris, let me ask you this, so just to change it up for you, since it's hard to find disagreement or something to add. How recoverable do you think this is? How much do you attribute a lot of these slow starts individually to a lot of these young guys as just being a confidence issue? So therefore, there's a potential that once they find a comfort zone, like Nikhil did maybe in one last night's game.
Are you saying confidence or competence?
I'm talking about confidence because I feel like that's at the root of a lot of these problems that we see going on. But I'm curious on Chris's take. Like, do you think there can be a turnaround with the vast majority of these young guys?
I mean, it's tough, man. Like, you know, on one end, I look at it and I agree with some people that say, yo, you don't have Zion, you don't have Brandon. Like, the shots look different. The opportunities that, you know, the roles, everything's going to be different. However, if there is one thing that you can evaluate, if you can't evaluate, you know, result necessarily, you can evaluate intention and decision making. And I think that's where some of this kind of hits the wall when we're talking about disappointment, like, you know, or certain individual strides for Jackson. Did Jackson box out here? Did Jackson grab a rebound here? Did he put together, you know, multiple plays where he just looked like he knew what he was doing? You know, did he have a back-to-back sequence offensively or defensively where, you know, you can see, all right, he's putting something together. It's the overall consistency, right? Like Kyra has one game where he plays well, and then he has two back-to-back ones where he goes 1-for-7 and 1-for-8, and it's like, damn, it's like, you know, what can you really hang your hat on? Nikhil, I do think Nikhil's going to figure it out and strengthen things together. I do think that will happen because a lot of it is mental, and I think if you continue to give him reps, and if the situation doesn't change, you know, hopefully with Brandon coming back, that's going to open up some extra things for him. Or maybe the lights just went off for him against his cousin, and you see the ball started going a little bit more. He noticed some of the things that worked for him, driving to the lane. I do believe that aspect is going to work. But, Ali, for certain guys when we're talking confidence, Najee Marshall, man, the confidence in anything in regards to his offensive game is gone right now. The aggression that we saw in attack.
You remember the guy shooting mid-range shots in preseason and summer league and getting five rebounds in the first 3 minutes? Where's that guy?
The floaters, the guy who would grab a rebound and push the pace on his own. Like now, you know, he's almost afraid to do some of those things, and that's not who he is. That's not who he is verbally in regards to the energy and the shit that he talks on the floor. And that's not who we thought we were getting based off some of the things that we've seen dating back to last year, you know, for a small period of time, summer league. It's not that his game regressed, it's the confidence. I don't know how that gets better for him. I hope that there's a way. But yeah, I mean, that's one guy. Trey Murphy's another one. Right now, I mean, he goes to a spot, you know, in the preseason and summer league, where he's getting shots, getting opportunities, he's feeling himself, he's able to do multiple things on the floor, and now all those shots are 10 times more difficult, and he can't find a way to contribute consistently, you know, to where he's feeling like, all right, I know what I'm doing. And yo, by the way, bro, you're a rookie. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, for certain guys, yeah, I mean, Jackson, off and on, playing this game, not playing this game. The only person, if we're talking confidence, and you know, with the people that we've mentioned so far, that I think will be okay, that I think can turn it around per se, is Nikhil, and I mean Brandon will return. I'm not really concerned about him, and I'm not concerned about Herb or Jonas. But I mean a vast majority of those guys. I mean, I can't tell you how things are going to turn around for Kyra. What can Kyra do for you consistently if he can't, you know, convert a floater, if he can't convert a consistent layup, if he's not a good outside shooter, if he can't impact the game defensively? And then on top of your veterans who you brought there to bring some type of consistency to you, they're not able to get it done, you know, either. But it's, man, I don't have much else for you.
I'm gonna put it like this. You know you have the worst bench in the NBA. The Pelicans have the worst bench in the NBA. And you were counting on everything being right with your starting unit. You're counting on Devontae starting with Nikhil, with Brandon, with Zion, with Jonas, and everything's supposed to fall behind that. But you have nothing but unproven players and Josh Hart on your bench. Nothing but unproven players and Josh Hart. And then on top of that,
was it supposed to be? I mean, Satoransky was supposed to come in and lead the reserve.
See, that's the whole thing is, again, we talked about this today, Ali, on my show.
Right.
It's about the floor. The floor for this team is incredibly low. And you,
I don't know. When you're talking about Zion and B.I., right, healthy, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm saying it is still because you don't have – the things you can control, whether Brandon Ingram or Zion Williamson are not there, this team isn't good at. They don't make the they don't have the mental parts of the game down. So you just because, oh, well, all of a sudden Zion and Brandon are here, we're going to be smarter. We're not going to dribble it off our feet. We're not going to play poor defense. We're not going to get caught throwing the ball into the stands. We're not going to take bad shots because there's going to be points even in those games where Brandon and Zion have to get off the floor. So the things they can control, and that's what Willie's talking about. That's what Willie's talking about. It's not. It's competing is not just the effort. It's how are you engaged mentally, and on a night-to-night basis, when you know you have you are undersupplied in talent, you cannot be undersupplied in intellect and execution. And every night against teams that they should be more than just competitive with. You're talking about if Nikhil doesn't make a layup at the end. Five straight double-digit losses and 7 of your 11 are by double digits. That is not just a talent deficiency because other bad teams around the league ain't losing like that. And you can put Zion and Brandon out there and you can hold on to that. But I promise you, this is the same team that won 31 games a year ago with Brandon and Zion on the court for most of that season. And you've gotten these, and you're taking guys around them who have regressed or who are just not ever going to be better than they are. That bench is not going to be a great bench when Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson come back because those players are not going to be better. The mix wasn't right. You still didn't go out and get shooting. You only came back. You had the same amount of proven shooters when you started this season that you had last season. 2. You had Ingram and Zoe last year. You have Ingram and Devontae this year. And you're counting on Jonas. And Jonas is your best three-point shooter right now. Yep. But you have no other consistent three-point shooters on your roster.
Yeah, let me read this, and then I'll let either Chris or Kevin respond. And it's a quote that I mentioned to you on your show today from Josh Hart after that loss to the Mavericks when he was trying to pinpoint exactly why their struggles. So this is what he said. Morale isn't down. We still have that pop. But we've got to make sure that I feel like sometimes we toe the line between that energy and that pop and a lack of attention to detail, he said, after pausing for a bit. I think that's the biggest thing. For us, being young is not an excuse. Losing's not an excuse. We've got to make sure that we are focused and we have an attention to detail on the scouting reports and have game discipline. When we do that, that's when things are really going to start to turn around. We're not bad at those things at all. We've got to grow up and get better at them. I think that's something that we've got to do and we're going to do. Something that we've got to continue to build on, hold each other accountable. And then he went on to talk about, you know, the guys being young, that they've got to dive into their film work because they can't get as much practice time in. So whatever, Kevin, Chris, you guys want to respond to any of that on what we're talking about?
I mean, look, where I'm at with, I guess the first part where what Grubb was explaining, I do believe that Zion and Brandon, they help from this perspective as a basketball player. When you're out there with guys and along with Jonas and what you're expecting from Devontae Graham and probably, I mean, but I think that those two guys, and mainly Zion, they are going to put these other guys in a position to where you're talking about them being more relaxed. You're talking about them having to do less. talking about them having different type of shot profiles. Is it going to fix? Is it going to fix some of the silly turnovers? Not necessarily. But I do believe that some of that has to do with some of these guys just trying to do too much things that they are incapable of doing. Their roles change.
They're incapable of making a basic pass. They're incapable of keeping up with their defensive assignment against teams like the Thunder.
I'm not debating that, Grub. I'm not debating this current team and what they're doing. I'm just saying, if we're talking about, I can't act like bringing in a guy that's averaging 27 and goddamn 27 and 7 or 8 or whatever it was on 62% shooting, right? One of the best paint scorers, if not the best paint scorer in basketball, isn't going to open up. Hold on. Yeah, but Grub, listen. We haven't seen that with this particular team. If Jonas is playing this well, you don't think that adding Zion and Brandon elevates his workload too? You don't think that it's going to open up even better shots for Devontae? You don't think it changes Nikhil Alexander Walker's role? You don't think it gives Trey Murphy, who may have a few open shots, a lot more wide open shots with number one's ass on the floor, like, you know, at all? Yeah, I just think everybody's role changes with those two. I'm not saying it fixes everything.
But they're not going to be a good basketball team.
No, but I agree to Chris's point on this too, Grub.
I disagree with that, Grub.
I will bet you anything. I will bet you the blood out my. I will bet you my life that they won't be a good basketball
team. I'm not saying that they're going to be a good basketball team. Whatever we use to define that. But what I am saying is some of these guys are going to play better just off of – you play basketball, Grub. You know what it's like to play with scrubs and play with two and play with really good dudes and how it changes. You've been
You can't make scrubs into not scrubs. And some of those dudes are in scrubs
I think, David, yeah. I honestly disagree. I think focus changes. I think confidence levels affect your ability to focus.
Right. Where have you seen this with a team? Y'all be writing these fantasies about basketball teams, and that stuff doesn't happen in reality. Tell me where you've ever seen it. Show me the team that happened with a group this young, with a group this unaccomplished. Tell me where it happened. Show me where it happened, because otherwise it feels like y'all just dealing in a fantasy.
No, I don't think that's the case, man. Didn't Nikhil in the small vacuum that we've seen, right? That's right around the amount of games that he's played. That he played this year, the games that he played with Zion for heavy minutes, didn't Nikhil play pretty damn well for the most part? I mean, are we acting like
the record in those games, Chris?
I understand but we're talking about the basketball players as well, right? You said that some of these guys aren't going to get better.
No, Jackson Hayes.
You said some of these guys aren't going to be better basketball players.
Billy Hernan Gomez can't even get on the court right now.
Some of these guys you can't change. I'm not talking about Jackson, but they're a handful of guys that I think. Zion and Brandon
just because their numbers will improve don't mean they're better. Somebody's got to get the numbers. It's the NBA. Somebody's got to get the numbers.
I disagree. I think with Chris, I think he's right. Some players would benefit. We see the best players in this league bring up scrubs. So if you put a guy that performs kind of well, but he's a replacement level player, then all of a sudden he goes to a different team and all of a sudden his production drops off and people wonder why. That's the effect, I think, of having a guy like we think Zion will be, and certain times Brandon. We've seen it with LeBron, Michael Jordan. I've watched David. Think of all the times you've watched the Knicks or whatever some of your favorite teams were, and then think about the role players and when they go elsewhere. Anthony Mason, was he ever anywhere as good as he was with the Knicks?
Yeah, he made an All-Star team with Charlotte, and he made
one or two years, huh?
He made All-Star team with Charlotte after they traded him.
Yeah, just for 1 year, and he dropped off a cliff after that.
Okay. All
right. I just think that
Anthony Mason.
I think both you and
you
Chris
comparing
are
him to these kids that don't know how to play basketball. You comparing Anthony Mason because Anthony Mason would be a starter on this Pelicans team.
Oh my God! Yeah, he'd be great.
So that's not a fair comparison because you wouldn't start any of the dudes on that bench.
But you're missing the point, though. I don't want to get off topic too much here, but I'm just saying you don't think that having the star guy soaking everything up suddenly puts other guys at ease to where their focus is better, that they don't.
What have we said about those star guys the whole time? Zion hasn't shown the leadership to get himself in shape.
It's not the leadership. It's just soaking up the attention, having the ball, and the other guy's like, okay, he's got it because he's going to, touch it 60, 70, 80 times, and he's going to dictate.
When does that happen? February?
I don't know. That's the biggest question, right?
No, that's what I'm talking about. Y'all talking about what might be. I'm talking about what is. And the fact is, y'all, you're counting on something.
We can talk about both. We can talk about both.
You can't act like the first 12 games
is going to be what we see for the last 70. No, I'm not going down that road.
All right, Kevin.
I mean, I'm kind of in between all of you guys in this sense. Like, I agree with a lot with what Chris said and Ollie said, but I also understand where you're coming from, and I agree with that to some extent because we've been saying this forever, is like they put Willie Green in a terrible position. He was the kind of coach they should have hired year one. And now he's in this position where he has to learn on the job with guys that aren't ready to do the job. And so you can't expect this team to hit on all cylinders, even if they were healthy at the beginning of the season for quite a while, because there's so much learning and growth, not just from the players that needs to happen, but also from the head coach. And then now you take Zion and Ingram out of the picture and it becomes much worse. One thing, if you put Zion and Ingram back in the picture, then that's two of, as you would say, scrub guys that don't have to play anymore because you have these two guys in that rotation. So now you have better basketball players on the court to begin with. And I agree in the sense that they draw so much attention that it makes everybody else's job easier. Other guys don't have to press as hard to make plays. When all else fails, get the ball into one of those guys and let them go ISO and get a bucket, and it makes everybody's job easier. I still think we're probably around a 500 team if they had perfect health through the entire season, which we know you can't count on, especially in the COVID era, because somebody probably going to have to miss games because of COVID protocols. Then, of course, injuries are a constant issue with this team for its history. It's a bad situation, and I feel really bad for Willie Green, but I do think this team will look a lot better, a lot more competent when or if those two guys come in and get to play together for extended amounts of time, and also allows you to stagger so that you always have two of Zion and Valanciunas on the court at all times, so you have three caliber level players available, have two of those on the court at all times, which will totally elevate everything else that happens. Now, how bad are those guys around them? Right now, they look really bad. We've seen flashes from some of them in previous years that make you think that they could be better once things change, or once they get more comfortable, or once they have more safety valves and those two healthy guys coming back, sure. But it's no guarantee. This team has always struggled with low IQ basketball players forever, it seems like, since Chris Paul left. And it appears we have a lot of those guys on the roster still. Without changing that, I don't think you're going to see a drastic improvement. I think there's still moves to be made. Now, who's going to be allowed to make those moves? Who should be allowed to make those moves are questions that we got to look at going forward. I think at least the game should become more enjoyable, even if it doesn't translate to winning once those guys come back. And for a season that is basically lost already, that's really all you can ask for, or to at least be fun to watch them again. And hopefully you get some internal development that way. And they probably bank too hard on that internal development being the thing that moves them forward, especially with a brand new coach with no head coaching experience. But that's what they banked on. And now this is what is reaping right now. So it's frustrating, but I mean, I do agree. I think it's going to look a lot better when those guys are back. I still don't know that it's going to lead to a lot of wins yet. I see their potential for that to happen, but I think starting out in this huge hole that we're in, I think you can write off any chance of playoffs. Maybe you could still sneak into the play-in tournament as the 10th seed. And if you're good at that point, maybe you can get into the playoffs. But I just think we dug ourselves too big of a hole, and we have no idea when Zion's coming back. And that really is the only thing we can really hope for to really catapult this team forward, is for him to come in shape, committed, and at least play 50 games this season.
If you count, if you would say the low part to be 10 would be somewhere around 36, maybe 36 wins. So that means they'd have to go 35 and 36 the rest of this year. We said they would, if at full strength, before the season started, before we knew about any injuries, the best bet was that they could get to 500. So if they're never, and that's the thing this season now, is they're never going to be at full strength. Because there's no way Zion will get to peak shape at any point of this season. If he doesn't play until December, is he going to be all? You don't get in shape in January, February playing games. So if he's under those restrictions and minutes, he may not be playing 30 plus minutes a night until February or late January. And by then, where is this team? And we've already talked, we've just seen Brandon Ingram miss 2 weeks with his hip contusion, which is about what it would take. But again, you can't trust anything. And my thing is, it's not as much on the players as it's about the fit. They don't fit the roles. It doesn't matter. People are not going to slide back into their natural fits because there aren't enough people who fit in those places. You've got just because you have a guy who plays that position doesn't mean he should be there. And you built this team on a fragile premise that everything with our starters goes right and all of our young people grow up at the same time. And no team has ever had that happen. Griff bet on a bad premise, and he put it all on a table with a shaky leg. And I'm sorry, it'll look better. They'll score more. It'll be best. Is the defense going to get better when Zion comes back? Is he going to be a stopper? And it could change things for Jonas Valanciunas, absolutely, because now his touches are going to look different. So, yeah, then he's got to readjust to what Zion is doing, because the places where he occupies right now, he may not occupy those when Zion comes back. He's never played with Zion, not 1 minute. So, yeah, it's easy for Graham to adjust. But then what do you do about Herb Jones, who's been your best defender, and his role now changes, and you're putting him against second unit scorers more often instead of being able to use him against first unit scorers as much as you'd like. So, yeah, people's roles will change, but it also will impact some things that we don't know yet. We can't assume that all the things that come in will innately be positive, because it's not going to be 100% health for Zion or Brandon from the day they get back. Both of them will be nicked up and trying to get in shape the rest, or trying to deal with an injury, because Brandon will get hurt again. And if so you're lucky if you get 50 games out of Zion, you're lucky. And if you get 60 out of Brandon, so if you play 60 games with Brandon Ingram and 50 with Zion, do you think they go 500 in those games? Don't.
You know, I don't think, I mean, for me, none of my argument was based around playing or how many games they would win. I just looked at a certain group of players, a handful of players that I felt like adding those two guys changes a lot for them on the floor mentally. Changes it just makes the game easier for them. That's my thought. Trey, you know, maybe Herb, Nikhil, Like, those are the guys that I'm looking at. Josh Hart, like, those are the individuals that I'm looking at and saying, okay, you slide those two dudes in, something positive is going to happen with those individuals. You also slide them in, and a few guys that we're seeing right now don't touch the floor at all, which could be a positive in itself. You know, so that's the mindset that I'm coming from. You know what I mean? Trey Murphy's shots are going to be different when number 1 and 14 are out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the perspective that I'm coming from with it. Does that mean that they're going to go out there and win a bunch of games and go on these winning streaks that we haven't seen enough from in the franchise history? No, not necessarily. But does it make some of these guys look more competent and consistent? Since that's what we were kind of battling with earlier, I think it does, and I think it will personally. But you know, that's just how I see it.
Yeah, but here's the thing: when's Zion going to be back? As David originally said, so really, it's Brandon Ingram, and what can you get from the guys that are struggling right now? And that's what Willie Green's got to figure out. And I'm not confident he's going to be able to. You know,
and you had Brandon playing 37 plus minutes before he got hurt. He was 37 minutes every night. And you don't have a legitimate 3 to play behind him. So if when he comes back, he's going to be pushing 38, 40 minutes some nights off that hip.
Well, yeah.
See, that's what I'm like. No argument there. I don't blame the players as much as I blame how this team was put together. There were guys that needed to move on. When you got Trey, I think you needed to get somebody else up off that bench and get some more. The veterans that you went and got. Again, to me, the ultimate thing about the Pelicans is not the potential that guys have. There are a lot of guys on this team with potential. But when you have all these guys with potential, you are guaranteeing that none of them will reach it. Because no team in the NBA can devote the type of time and resources to develop 6 guys. And none of these guys are mature enough to do it all on their own in a summer. So you don't see the kind of Kobe work ethic. You don't see the kind of Giannis. We're going to compare most guys to that. But somebody on this team has to show that kind of tenacity who's a star-level player. And you've not seen it out of any of them. Even what you saw out of Brandon, he looked better and more competent and more efficient as a scorer. But did you still see an imprint defensively? Did you still see an imprint?
I saw a huge improvement from the last few years. Right? I mean, didn't we see that? And what about Jonas Valanciunas? I think his work ethic and his demeanor.
I love Jonas. I've not said anything negative about Jonas.
But I'm just giving you positives on why I think the situation could improve. Not would, could. Because I feel like there's certain things that are on this team that weren't there last year. They had the benefit of health last year. They're not going to have that this year. I think we've established that pretty good. But I think there's a certain vibe, even with Devontae, there's a certain... It's just different, right? You move Bledsoe automatically, Steven Adams, who doesn't give you much, and, of course, Lonzo's, you know, up and down roller coaster. I feel like that eventually is going to somehow, you know, transpire to where now with this current group, things are going to be better once Zion, even though he won't be 100%, but he'll be out there. You know, I think Zion at 75% can still get you great numbers and lead you to wins. B.I., yeah, he's going to be banged up, but guess what, David? B.I.'s been banged up his first 2 years an awful lot. Remember how much we talked about his knees 1 year, right? It bothered him. And yeah, his numbers dipped a little bit, but he's still contributing. But now that he cares on defense, that's what I'm saying. I'm not burying this team yet. I can't do it.
As of today, all three of you guys, Ali, what would be your then, just if you had today to adjust your wins, how many games this team win?
Ugh. You know, that's impossible because you got to get Brandon Ingram back. Number one,
give me a 10 game. Give me a 10 of 10 game window between what and what?
I mean, I would say in 2 weeks' time, if Brandon can stay on the court, these guys start developing a little bit of that chemistry. Because the second unit, my God, they're a dumpster fire. They've got to get somebody firing, giving them something. Whether it's Kyra, Satoransky. Nikhil being a little more consistent, but they got to get something. And I think they should. I just don't see that all these guys are going to hover around 30% field goal percentages, right? So I don't know. I'm thinking about 2 weeks' time. If they can start playing 4-6
type of every 2 weeks, right? Every 10 game allotments, then, you know, I can see that chance for improvement. But it's going to, of course, take B.I. being out there healthy. Devontae still giving you what he's been giving you, especially with Valanciunas, right? So you're going to, yeah, it's putting an awful lot of eggs in one basket. But I think, there's a chance.
Chris, how many? Give me a 10-game window.
Dog,
Your best guess.
Whew.
Nobody's going to crucify you.
I think you're probably, just because I don't know, and I can't even tell you if Zion's going to play a game this year because the timeline continues to be in pushback. I believe he's going to step on the floor, but do we get to a spot to where they just say, fuck it, no, like, you know, just, you know, let's hold him out. Let's not risk it. We're 2-48. I mean, I'm exaggerating here, but I will say that I think when Brandon was out there, I mean, it's clearly the games were a little bit more competitive. They had opportunities. Hawks game, for example.
Yeah, Kings game to make a run back. Kings games, man, they hurt.
Yeah, I mean, and then in the game without Brandon, you know, you see them fight all the way back to get it to within one or within two, and you went through the RJ Barrett experience. So I think it's enough fight there. The players are telling you, you know, it's the same thing, and I think that they're going to stand with Willie enough. If Brandon's out there, you may be a 30-win team, maybe somewhere in there. And I mean, that's my best guess. Zion is what elevates them, you know, beyond that, closer to a 500 or better team. He's that important and makes that much of a difference in my eyes, whether he's in shape 75%, you know, or not. I think he's that much of a X factor that the teams have to deal with, even if it's just offensively, you know. So I'd say somewhere in that 30 win mark. They're going to fight enough. They're not going to quit on Willie. I mean, I just don't believe that they are.
Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say that they're going to be a 29-win team, and the 10-game swing would be 24 to 34 wins, I would say. I think 34 is their ceiling, and my big concern is when Zion comes back, is the hole going to be so deep and his relationship going to be so strained with David Griffin in the front office that he's not going to give a shit? And you know, so you're counting on this paint monster to come in and solve things. But if he's not committed, if he feels like the season's a waste already, if he's disgruntled with the front office, which it already seems like he is, how much effort is he really going to put out? And, you know, how long will it take us to ramp him up into playing shape? And when, and like you said, when is he even coming back? We have no idea. So I'm more pessimistic than I've ever been this season. And I think, you know, 29 seems about right. 29, 30, right at that line seems about right to me, because I was considering them being right around 500, you know, not expecting full health, but just in a normal situation where we start the season where everybody's healthy. I think some people are going to miss time here and there. And now we know Zion's out really indefinitely, and we still don't even know when Brandon's coming back, because it keeps looking like he was supposed to come back 3 games ago and he's still not back yet. So we'll see how it stretches out, and without some major turnaround, without some major shuffling of the decks, or, you know, somebody getting a miracle health cure, then I think it's a pretty bleak look in the win column. You know, I'm just hoping we get to have some fun basketball again at some point.
One thing I quickly want to say, Kevin, because you mentioned at the start of your discussion here, is the fact that Griff and Zion, I saw them yesterday in pregame talking, cordial, smiling, and then I saw it today after practice between B.I. and Griff. So I just want people to know, even though I haven't tweeted out, that they're on, at least it looks like, happy terms with their GM. Because right now there's probably all sorts of things being said, so I just wanted to put that out there.
That mathematically, to get to 29, they got to go 28-42 the rest of the way.
So, what was that again, David? I missed it.
Because there's 70 games left in the season, right? So
yep.
They'd have to go 28-42.
Lord, please let that at least be doable. Lord, please, I'm begging. I mean, yeah. I've never been so thirsty for a 31 team.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. People like Schmidt are arguing, what's the point of that then, right?
So yeah, that's the what I was leading up to is, okay, let's say they get to 30 wins. Let's say that happens. Is that enough to save David Griffin's job? Kevin?
No, I mean, I find it hard without some major turnaround and some huge proclamation from Zion Williamson. I really don't think David Griffin's job is saved. I think he will be fired at whether it's the end of this year or before the trade deadline, because I just think this whole thing has been a complete mess. And, you know, you can look at all the moves, break down all the moves. I think the coaching thing is enough. You know, you fire a coach every year. You set this franchise back years because of that. I think, you know, we were talking about it in the spaces last night. Shamit brought up, like, rebuilds. And, Grubb, you always talk about this, how David Griffin started on third base with all the assets he has. Now you look at the other teams that are sort of doing the similar kind of rebuilds, like that. They have more assets now than we had, than we have right now, and we don't really have much to show for it. So that's frustrating. And then the other thing is just that, you know, the most important thing is that relationship with Zion Williamson, and it's good to hear what Ollie has said about that. But, you know, that's in front of media, so we know what it's really like when they're apart from each other or when they're together outside of the eyes of the media. And I'm sure both of them sort of have an agreement to make it look like everything's happy-go-lucky for both to take their reputations when they're in front of the eyes of the media. Not to really project, but, you know, we know that there's unhappiness there in that situation. That's not something we're fabricating here. And from the beginning, that whole relationship was mishandled. You know, Griffin, like, probably gave up too much leeway to start out. He didn't manage that relationship. He wasn't stern enough from the beginning. So then once they start to take an inch, obviously they start to take a yard. And then now you're in 2 years losing. You have the most promising young prospect that there is in the league, you know, that's still on his rookie deal. And everybody wants him. And there's nothing really to tie him here. You know, when he was in Cleveland and LeBron James came back, he didn't like that because, you know, he wanted to build organically and he didn't want to be told what to do by a superstar or have a superstar dictate what he's doing. And now he's having that again with Zion Williamson, who is a guy who hasn't really been able to stay on the floor. And you haven't been winning, and that guy doesn't have an emotional tie to the city because he wasn't born here. So managing that relationship is the biggest thing. And if there's fracture there, if there's any hints of fracture with all the other stuff that is also out there, all the bad drafting, all of the bad team building, all of the coaching stuff, all of the losing press conferences, losing the Lonzo trade so badly, all of those things, you know, I just don't see how he recovers. Especially, I think Shamit also said this in those spaces, is that, you know, the people that are involved, Gail Benson's inner circle and the Mickey Loomis, all of those guys, any negative Dennis Lauscha, they don't want to be negative. They don't want to be viewed as a laughing stock. They went through that with the Saints. They established themselves as a premier franchise in this, and they don't know that for the other franchise that's in the building, that it's, again, that there's a joke of a franchise and it's an embarrassment. And I'm sure, you know, Gail Benson doesn't want her name in Bill Simmons' mouth anymore or things like that. And all of that is building up, and all of these reports coming out fighting with Alvin Gentry, who we know Gail Benson had a good relationship with, all of those kind of things just spell doom for David Griffin. And I think it's more of a matter of when than if.
Chris, are we looking at a lame duck winter? Because it does impact this team that if Griffin is empowered to make moves at the trade deadline, if he's not going to be here next year, do you expect the organization is, if he's not fired at that time, if they don't make moves, do you take that as a symbol? Would you take that as a symbol or a sign that he's not coming back?
I mean, they did it. It's what they did to Dell Demps, you know, during that time, they, you know, let him finish out the year. They made that decision right around that Anthony Davis trade request and, you know, pretty much blocked him from making any moves that could, you know, that could help or hurt the team's future. And they wanted to let the next guy, you know, that came and make it, you know, make those moves. Now, this situation is interesting because one of the things that I keep hearing is that if Griffin is let go, they would keep, you know, a lot of people that we, you know, that some of us are fond of that are in the organization, in the front office now, they would keep them. Maybe someone gets elevated or they just wipe out the president, you know, of basketball operations title completely. And you see Langdon, you know, and, you know, being the guy and Swin and so on and so forth. But so that part I'm interested in, you know, maybe it's a situation where it doesn't get out about Griffin's future. They still make moves, but Langdon's the one that's really, you know, that's pretty much making them. But yeah, man, I don't, you know, the Gentry thing is incredible. And I'm kind of interested that we didn't talk about that really at all. I mean, you know, Gentry wanting a clothesline Griffin, that wasn't in the article, but, you know, me knowing Gentry the way that I do, especially after a game, or as you guys know, I mean, I could expect that his choice words weren't of the, you know, of the PG-13 variety. But yeah, I mean, another season where this team doesn't end up making something happen, they don't sniff a play-in, Zion's future continues to be up in the air. You know, Brandon Ingram, you know, your second guy in charge, putting too much on his shoulders. The pieces, the guys that were kept, the rookies that, you know, were supposed to make jumps, if they don't make jumps, which so far we haven't seen consistent leaps or anything close to it. And then, I mean, look. I mean, you know, you put your coach Willie Green in a real tough situation. No one's saying anything positive about, you know, about the organization. It's constant, you know, shitting on New Orleans in any case that you can. If people aren't showing up for the game, you know, on top of that, it's just, you know, how can you move forward with grit? I mean, this was supposed to be the year where things shifted. We talked about it. We've been talking about this almost since, you know, the end of year one, mid part year one. Like, year three was supposed to be the point for players, people in the front office, where everything turned up for them. They made a leap as a team, as individuals. Injury or not, I can't foresee if this team has another bad season, they're somewhere in the lottery, in a position where they can't, where, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, if you want to, even if you end up with a top five pick, do you want to have to draft another guy to develop with, after everything that we've talked about with this team going forward? I mean, it just seems like a large consumption of errors to trust in Griffin's hands to have to find a way to fix when so far he hasn't shown the ability to do it enough to put together a confident basketball team, whether tragedy strikes or not. So I don't know, man. I mean, I think more than anything, if the team is right, if people inside the organization and on the roster, if they are messing with him, and we're seeing, you know, just guys that are disconnected from him from that perspective, on top of the whole fan base team, I mean, we're finally at a spot where almost everybody I talk to on the spaces outside of one guy, maybe two, had negative things to say about Griffin. It's the first time for me that I've seen that. I don't know how you put him in a situation where he's allowed to do much of anything going forward. I don't know when they pull the plug, but I mean, yeah, man, something drastically, like Kev said, would have to change for me to see a situation where he returns. You know, you gotta make something move really soon to kind of clean up the mess however you can. I mean, if he was handed it, especially from what you guys mentioned about him basically being on third base with everything that was given or put forward for this team from an asset and a personnel perspective.
Ollie, you know, you've heard versions of the Alvin Gentry story. I think the main thing, however it happened, whatever the exchange was, I think ultimately this is about, again, it goes to Griffin's perception within and outside the organization, his credibility. And I think those things have been damaged with the fan base beyond repair. I think they've been damaged around the league beyond repair. And his, again, he was supposed to be the person to make the organization at the very least respectable. And the organization is not respected. Do you think he lasts?
Right now, I would say no. And there's a couple of key things that are going to determine his fate. One, the Pelicans really are going to have to start playing better at some point in the next 3 months, because the NBA trade deadline is February 10th, essentially, right? Almost 3 months to today. So I don't know how you can give guy control in making decisions that are going to affect future additions of this roster if you are more than halfway out on him or even we're close to it. So that's going to be very determinative on how and when these Pelicans start playing better. If they don't, then it's clear he's definitely done. At some point, the results matter. And the way they've been trending downwards, and you've got Zion and you've had all this hope, and you just throw everything in that Kevin mentioned earlier. You just put it all on the plate. You know, you should explore going elsewhere. Even the most ardent fans can't defend him anymore. So I think that's pretty clear and cut and dried. But you're right. It's the professionalism. That's the number two thing for me that gets me. You know, biggest thing that they've talked about besides having some sustainable success, organic, all this and that, is the fact that everybody's been wanting to build a culture here, right? Pelicans have always been this ugly stepchild to the Saints. Well, Griffin was supposed to change that. Gail Benson opened up her pocketbooks. And yet you keep hearing all these stories about the way Griff has had, you know, some relationships go really south. You know, J.J. Redick last year. But that, you know, a lot of us kind of understood because we know who kind of J.J. is, right? He's one of these players who feels a little bit more entitled than he should, especially considering he's not a star. But Alvin, he's not. He is the most likable, most easy to get along guy there probably is in the entire NBA. So for Alvin to be upset, and David, you know how many times we talked to Alvin, and he was always open and upfront about everything. So for Alvin to say and do what he did, and I've heard pretty much that what Jake Fisher wrote on Bleacher Report is pretty darn accurate in terms of there being kind of that, at least that animosity. I had heard about it when the Kings were here in town. And I heard, because I didn't get a chance to talk to Alvin, but I know some people that did, and he wasn't happy at all with Griff. He's held kind of a grudge about the way he was thrown out of here and stuff. And it's completely understandable. But for Alvin to have it, you know how serious their relationship went south. And that's a non-starter. That should be a non-starter for Gail Benson, Mickey Loomis. Because if you're going to establish any kind of culture, if you don't have that type of presence at the top, you know, being able to get along with everybody, being cordial, being professional and all this and that, then what are you doing? That you're fighting yourself on trying to turn yourself into a winning franchise. So, yeah, like I said, the odds aren't good. And I'm pretty sure I know where your answer is, Greg, but go ahead and let us know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how he can surpass, you know, I think he's lame duck now, and I think you're right. My bet would be that they would promote from within because they like Willie, and you wouldn't want to take the chance of somebody coming in and saying, that's not the coach I want. I want to move him on. When you could have one, I think they're very afraid of making the Monty Williams mistake twice, of having a very capable young coach and not sticking with him long enough to get that and bear fruit, and the fact that you're also paying two other coaches still some money. So, well, you're not paying Alvin anymore, but you're still paying Stan some money. But I don't think Gail wants to go through that again, and I think you're right. Ultimately, this is going to become about the results, number one, because if in 3 years from having the number one pick, and not just any number one pick, having the generational number one pick, and he's available for less than a third of the games potentially that he could have played in those seasons, and you've won your average winning season, your average season is like 30 and 40 or 30 and 50. That's just not what you were supposed to yield from this. That's just not what you were, where you were supposed to be today. And there's no excuse for it. You can't talk about injuries. You can't talk about all those things, because for every one of those, there's a team around this league that I could say, well, what about them? And I think if you have to ask those questions to David Griffin today, all he's going to tell you are more things that just sound right, but aren't. And I think that's the biggest problem, is who could trust him? You cannot send him back to the fan base again and say, I've got it this time, trust me, because they don't believe it. There's no way in that locker room that they haven't read this stuff and heard this stuff. And these are young guys. So young guys are more prone to think that this shit is funny. And that's the part for me, is like, I don't know how you can have control of the organization. This ain't Pat Riley walking down to heat practice and everybody going, oh shit, Pat's here. We got to, you know, act right. Griff, I think they've, you know, I think players know. Players know when somebody's not long to be here. And I think that's another thing for this team to overcome too, is because I think a lot of them know that for sure this group will not come back as it's constructed next season, because whomever is here knows that they're going to have to win immediately and they have to go. And I think that's going to be a big part of how this season plays out too, because guys start going for numbers so that they can, before they get out. And we'll see what happens with that. I don't think Willie will allow it as much as you might think, but everybody's different. And there are going to be guys who do just give up on the season at some point. And that's what losing team, it happens on every losing team. It happens on every losing team. There's going to be guys who give up. And I think ultimately that falls on David Griffin. He set this whole thing up to fail. Last thing before we go, I mean, just end on this. They got back-to-back this weekend, tomorrow, Nets, Saturday, the Grizz, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is Grizz? Yeah. So two teams, Nets 8-3 right now, Grizz 6-4. Do you see wins in either of those games? Chris, we'll start with you.
No. I'm trying to be positive. I promise you I am. I mean, I think, of course, if I had to pick the game that they're more likely to, you know, to pull out, it would be the Memphis game. There's always a chance that, you know, with the way Brooklyn's record is good, but, you know, they've had, when you watch them play, you know, they're still, you can tell what they're missing. James Harden is still struggling to, you know, find his, I guess, pre-rule changes self without him being able to get to the free throw line 40 times a game, still working himself back in the, you know, in the shape. But Kevin Durant has been spectacular. And at the end of the day has always been an issue. And it's, you know, an issue for most guys in this, or teams in this league. I don't think that they have an answer for Kevin Durant, even if Herb Jones is guarding him. I just think that's going to be unlike anything that Herbert had to see. Just the ultimate professionalism and just all the different tricks and, you know, and the way that Kevin gets to his spots, and it's going to be different from a lot of the matchups that we've seen Herb have to see so far. I don't think you can really count on a Brooklyn game. We don't know if Brandon does come back for Friday, like it seems like it would, you know, if he will, I mean, will there be a minutes restriction? I mean, I really can't see it there. Saturday against the Grizzlies, you know, maybe. You know, I know they just got Dylan Brooks back. And as of late, they've been struggling when John Morant is off the floor. I mean, he's had to be spectacular in a lot of these games that they've ended up winning. So, I mean, there's an opportunity there. You know, you can say that, you know, the Jonas Valanciunas revenge game of sorts. You know, maybe that's a game that they can pull out. But, I mean, right now, until I know what's going to be Brandon's status and how many minutes he's going to play, how he's going to work himself back into the rhythm of things, I mean, I can't tell you that they're going to win any of these games on a back-to-back at that.
Kevin, with three games in 4 days, Do you think Brandon plays Friday, or do they hold him maybe till Saturday and give him a day of recovery to just see what he feels like before they play him on Monday? Or do you think they just say, look, you got to play, man?
Yeah, I mean, looking at the schedule, you got to assume he's not going to play a back-to-back. So you're going to choose one of those games. And considering one of those teams is the Brooklyn Nets and the other team is the Memphis Grizzlies, who you've had like really good success against for the past few years, I'd say you would hold him out of the Brooklyn game and let him play against Memphis and try to get that win. And, you know, Chris is right. Everything he said about Harden is right. But what you know about the Pelicans also is we are a cure-all for people who are struggling. And so I expect Harden to have a huge game against us and that sort of turn his season around. That's just how history goes for struggling guys when they come into the Smoothie King Center, unless they're on our and then, you know, I really don't expect them to win either game. If Brandon plays against Memphis, I think we have a real fighting chance. You know, Valanciunas is going to be out to prove something, but hey, Steven Adams is probably going to be out to prove something as well. I think nobody's going to be able to contain Ja Morant. Even Herb Jones is, you know, they'll put him on him and he'll help a little bit, but I think that, you know, he's just playing so high level right now, and he's so athletic that I think it's going to be a hard matchup for anyone. I think you could see Herbert Jones getting into some foul trouble early too, because, you know, we haven't really gotten a friendly whistle in a while, and I don't see why a 1-12 team will when without its superstars playing, and especially, you know, with the league surely wants young teams in small markets to have some firepower, some appeal, some star power, because it makes the league better. It makes people want to watch the game more, sells league pass subscriptions, has people tuning in to TNT on a Tuesday night, those kind of things. So, you know, I could see them, you know, leaning the way of the Grizzlies when it comes to calls, because they actually have a superstar player on the roster, where we probably won't, because I'm not sure Brandon plays in either of those games. But if we do, he will, you know, he'll probably play that Memphis game. But yeah, I just, you know, I think it's going to be dark days for a while. And it's not to say that the team won't compete and won't play hard. We see them do that. It's just we're overmatched and overmanned right now.
Ollie, the worst 10-game start since the Bensons took over. I mean, 20-game start since the Bensons took over is 4-16. Do you think the Pelicans can get to 4-16 in these first 20 games?
I don't know. I've looked at the next five games, right? We're, 12 games in, and I know besides the Nets, Grizzlies, Wizards, after that, it's the Heat and Clippers. I know the Clippers aren't taking anybody by storm, but I've watched.
They're Paul George right now.
What's that?
The Clippers have won four in a row.
Oh, have they? Okay, see, I didn't even know that. But I just know that Paul George has been one of the top five players easy in the NBA. So you've got Durant, right, coming up. Then you got Paul George around the corner. And the Pelicans, as Kevin said, are some magical elixir for guys struggling. So I don't know if they don't get that win against the Grizzlies, then there's no chance. But you almost have to think, well, in the next five games, they got to get at least a couple, right? Because there's only a few more chances after that. So Pacers are coming up, and the Timberwolves after them. But look, they've got to get to those games, and they can't go 0-5 here. They've got to get at least a couple wins. And I don't know where they're going to come from. I'm totally with Chris. I can see maybe them eking out that win against the Grizz. But again, let's not forget, John Morant's hitting another level too, right? He took off last playoffs, and he's been really incredible to watch so far this year. I've caught a couple of games. Wizards, they're shocking everybody. They're leading the East right now. So how they win there? The Heat, they're killers. So, David, answer your question. No, I honestly don't see them at least bettering 4-16. Maybe they'll tie, but chances are I'd put my money on 3-17.
And that's just rough, man.
That's crazy. Just rough. Yeah, that's terrible.
Guys, I hate to end on that down note, but let's give one up note. We got to have one positive.
Brandon's going to play tomorrow, and he's going to play well.
All right, that's Ollie's positive. He's calling Brandon Ingram playing tomorrow and playing well. Chris, you got a positive?
My positive will be that I think
you got to stop signing, dude.
I know, man. I listen. I mean, not only is it late, man, but God, I mean, you guys, this podcast was like a reminder of things that I hadn't thought about in regards to how bad shit is right now. I apologize. So I think JV can dominate tomorrow. You know, Brooklyn, you know, from a front court perspective, is pretty, you know, it's pretty small. I mean, you know, you're looking at Nick Claxton and Blake Griffin. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge playing a lot of those front court minutes. I think that can be a situation for him to take advantage of. And I guess my other positive is I am going to bank on Nikhil putting back-to-back good games together and maybe starting to get things rolling for, you know, an individual run for him. It may not be close to the leap that, you know, some take him to take, but I think he can start to get things in the right direction. And, you know, maybe tomorrow is, you know, another game in which he puts in the bag.
Kevin, you got one?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Nikhil, but since Chris already took that, let's just hope maybe Trey Murphy finds a shot again, and that will be exciting if he can hit some threes and just sort of electrify the people that made their way to the arena to cheer on Kevin Durant. Maybe that'll spark them. I think those are the two possibilities, really, is, you know, if Nas turned the corner, if he starts learning how to, you know, that he has to get to the basket, and if he starts getting himself to the line, which is something I think he can definitely do against Memphis, because their bigs seem to fall a lot. So if he's driving in the paint, and he can get those guys into foul trouble and live at the line, I think that's something that could really help us win that game. And like Chris said, the Nets are pretty undersized up front and don't really have a lot of rim deterrence there. So he should be able to thrive on driving to the basket, especially if, you know, James Harden is guarding him, who seems a little bit, you know, off physically still. That could be a huge benefit. But, I mean, if I'm going to sigh like Chris.
I'm about to say, tell him to stop signing.
Yeah, well, I got the flu. I got an excuse to make all kind of weird sounds right now. But Trey Murphy, yeah, if he can just get going shooting-wise, you know, and can get maybe like 6 or 7 three-point shot attempts in the next two games and convert like 40% of those, I think that would do a lot to energize the fan base. We'll have a young guy to feel good about again. And that would be enough to really make people pay more attention to the team or stick with watching the team, even if we're going to end up being 3-17, 4-16 over the next 20 games. Like I said, if they're putting together at least fun games, at least giving you something that you can root for every game, a guy to watch who's starting to develop and get something together, you know, those are the things you got to look for. So hopefully you get that from Trey, because we desperately need it.
I think the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to is how they respond to what Willie Green said. I want to see if you're going to come out after your coach has told you flat out that the level of effort wasn't good enough. This is the first real test of the mettle of this team. Now that it has gotten to the point where the coach has to say something, how do these guys come out of that locker room tomorrow night? Are we seeing them talk? Are we seeing them back to the team that we were told during the summer this is the most diving on the floor team I've ever seen? I want to see some floor burns then. You know, I want to see some physicality then. If the refs are going to let people push, don't bark at the refs, push. So that's what I'm looking forward to. My positive is I think Willie Green deserves to get one of these games. And I just think that if they got to come out and play, you might be able to catch Brooklyn. You might be able to catch them slipping. You might. And I think you give them a puncher's chance against Memphis, because the one thing that Memphis doesn't do great that the Pelicans can take advantage, hopefully, is Memphis is not a great outside shooting team. So if as long as you don't allow them to get hot, Memphis is going to give you opportunities to be in the game with them. So I think there's a chance to win one of these two. I'm not going to bank on it, but I want to see their response.
Yeah, I was just real quick going to add, since I only had like two words there, besides Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, man. I feel like he actually has been kind of a revelation, and that's why I mentioned I wanted to write an article on him. Because if you noticed, a couple of games ago, he was predominantly, besides Devontae Graham, bringing up the ball up the court for stretches and making plays. Kyra Lewis wanted no part. Other guys didn't want it. Josh did, and you know what? I thought he did a really good job. And if you look at his numbers, right, especially the per 36, not only are the points up, he's shooting the ball well, but like I said, I'm liking the assist-to-turnover ratio. And when you're grabbing the boards and you're able to push the way that Green and this coaching staff want you to do, and he's doing a lot of good stuff with it, you know, I like it. And therefore, I think he's going to continue his strong play, and he could be another difference maker, especially if BI plays. I could see what you guys are talking about. Maybe they could steal a game from the Nets, because it can't just be Durant, right? If Harden has another off game, yeah, maybe they could grab one. But like everybody has said, we cannot bank on it. There's just no way. You're on 8-game losing streak, and you just fell to the Thunder.
And not only that, I'll have a public apology to Josh Hart for saying that Najee could do his job. I apologize. I said it. I said it loud. I said it often. But I have to apologize to Josh Hart right here, right now.
I'm so proud.
I was just going to say, too, about Josh Hart is, like, I also like what I've seen from him in terms of leadership and on the court fire and what he brings in that avenue, because we haven't seen that from a lot of guys except for, like, when Jackson Hayes gets his Instagram highlight of the night. But, you know, I feel like he's sort of stepped up more to that role that I think the organization was hoping maybe Garrett Temple and Thomas Satoransky would bring, but we're seeing that more from Josh Hart as sort of that veteran leader, that rallying guy. So that's been nice to see as well.
It looks like Josh has actually added to his game, like legit.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he's driving to the basket. It's great.
Have you noticed his 3-point he's shooting over 60%, I want to say, of his shots from 10 feet and in. I know he's shooting less threes, but you know what? He's converting at a great rate, and he's getting those good looks, and they're going in. We haven't seen this out of him. I'm telling you, there's something maybe brewing here.
Let's hope. Apologies in the paint.
All right, fellas, we've done enough. We'll probably be checking in, you know, next week. Hopefully the losing streak will end by the next time we have one of these. Any final words for we all, guys?
Please get us a win, Pelicans. I don't want us to come close to that 13-game losing streak, man. No way. Remember how rough that was.
That was bad.
Sorry, go ahead, Greg. What were you saying?
No, I'm just saying we aren't that far from 13. We're in spitting distance.
I was just going to say, if we have any I doubt we still do, but if we have any QAnon listeners here, I guess we could start a let's go Griffin chant, right? We can do that.
All right. That picture that Ollie had of him sitting alone in the arena was awesome. He was just sitting so far away from any people that no one could throw something at him. But all right.
No, it's not that. He was always talking pregame to everybody, and that was just weird to see. That early in pregame for him to be sitting that far up alone, I'd never seen that before. That was odd.
No, I'm just messing with him. But I hope one day I do get to sit down with David Griffin. That would be hilarious. But I doubt it will ever happen, ever.
Or at least I hope there's a show that has a claymation fight to the death with you two, and that would be funny. Like, you know, if they bring back Celebrity Death Match.
DG versus DG.
I'll bet Grubb would be swayed and he would like David.
Ah, no way. No way. No way. Like, I mean, we've been around that guy. There's no way.
I don't know. One-on-one, I bet you Griff could work his magic even on Grubb.
No.
He is not Jim Jones. He is not Charles Manson.
I've been in front of him. I've looked in his eyes.
Yeah.
No, that ain't Prince. You know what I mean? You don't get lost in Griffith. No, they work for me. No.
He's not the Bob-omb.
Can't get his draw. All right.
Chris, you got anything, bud? Chris, save us.
I think ending any type of podcast with me thinking about Grubb and Griffin looking into each other's eyes is good enough for me.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Until the next time, for Kevin Berrios, for Chris Connor, for Ali Kosel, I am David Grubb. And this has been The Bird Calls. In the words of our esteemed friend Preston Ellis, let's go, Pel.
Let's go, Griffin.
For listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Preston, cut that part off. Preston, cut this part off the end. Don't let that go. Preston!